them. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This is Karen Edwards for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Modern Maturity. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from various sources, and I'm going to start with an article from AARP, the magazine that we've been reading, For the Love of Country, On the Road Again. So these are some places across America to get your country fix. And we talked about several last time. Let's go on to the Birthplace of Country Music Museum, Bristol, Virginia. Located on the Virginia side of Bristol, a city that straddles that state and Tennessee, the museum offers lively examinations of early country music. It also hosts performances and supports the annual Bristol Rhythm and Roots Reunion Festival. Then we have the Country Music Hall of Fame and Museum in Nashville. Housed in this massive building is the world's largest collection of country music artifacts. More than a million visitors enter the museum each year to view the instruments, outfits, and even automobiles on display. And there's a Bluegrass Music Hall of Fame and Museum in Owensboro, Kentucky. Visitors can watch historic film footage, view memorabilia from the likes of Bill Monroe and Earl Scruggs, and make music on banjos and other instruments. And finally, the Carter Family Fold in Hiltons, Virginia. This spot honors the first family of country music. It's open to visitors on Saturday evenings for tours of A.P. Carter's artifact-rich cabin, as well as concerts that are held at a rustic 800-seat venue. Now, moving on to another article in the same episode here. Changing Nashville. As America becomes more diverse, so does its music. And this is by Alana Nash. Country music has traditionally been slow to acknowledge societal changes, and white performers have dominated the genre. Over the years, there have been a few stars of color, but in 2019, the real bomb dropped. I think it's pretty amazing, offers documentarian Ken Burns, that the number one country single of all time is by a gay black cowboy. Burns is referencing Old Town Road by Little Nash X, a song that was then so controversial that the initial recording of the song was deemed outside the bounds of the genre and pulled from the country music charts. It recharted soon after when Billy Ray Cyrus collaborated with Lil Nas X. Then, today, there is more diversity in country music than ever. Black artists include Jimmy Allen, Mickey Guyton, Kane Brown, who is biracial, Brittany Spencer, Willie Jones, and Breland. Gay artists, including T.J. Osborne of the Osborne Brothers Osborne, and Shelley Wright, are also finding more acceptance. And Latino artists are expanding their country profiles beyond Freddie Fender, Johnny Rodriguez, and Rick Trevino, particularly with Alex Garrido and Cat Luna, known as Cat and Alex. When it comes to race, Beverly Keel, Dean of the College of Media and Entertainment at Middle Tennessee State University, sees three main factors at work here. Today, the industry has discovered that the audience will accept talented artists of color. The cultural effect of George Floyd's murder prompted a sort of racial reckoning in America, and Keel says there was an erroneous, widespread belief that African Americans were not interested in making country music. Country did have a black radio star as far back as the late 1920s. Indy Ford Bailey, a harmonica player and mainstay of the Grand Ole Opry for nearly two decades. But with the exception of Charlie Pride, who had a long and successful career, black artists would hit the charts in recent decades like pebbles in a pond rather than crashing waves. From the 70s through the 90s, only a few black musicians charted with singles. It wasn't until 2008 when Darius Rucker, the former lead singer of Hootie and the Blowfish, came over to country, that Nashville had another bona fide black star. Don't Think I Don't Think About It made him the first African-American to hit number one on the Billboard Country Singles chart since Pride in 1983. Still, Rucker remained alone as a modern black country hitmaker until 2018. That's when Jimmy Allen became the second black country artist to see his single debut, Best Shot, hit number one. In 2021, he won the Country Music Association Award for New Artist of the Year. From my vantage point, says Sarah Trahern, CEO of the Country Music Association, I see the industry expanding its own lens, which is allowing a more diverse range of stories to be told by artists from all backgrounds. Kane Brown might be the modern distillation of it all. His mother is white and his father is African American and Cherokee. Raised by a single parent, he was sometimes homeless. Now he's a multi-platinum selling artist who made Time magazine's list of the 100 most influential people last year. It's 2022. I think people are opening their eyes, ears, and hearts, Brown says. There is absolutely room to make more progress, but the truth is, this has always been a format with fans that looked and are diverse. But the industry hasn't always fully reflected that. I'm hopeful that by the time my daughter is a little older, she sees herself when she looks at all areas of entertainment, including country music. For gay artists, the road has been similarly bumpy, but is starting to smooth out. In early 2021, T.J. Osborne came out saying, I'm ready to put this behind me. In so doing, he became the first mainstream country artist to make such an announcement while in the prime of his career. Shelley Wright, best known for the singles Shut Up and Drive and Single White Female, took it on the chin when she came out in 2010. She says the distress over her sexuality and career nearly drove her to suicide. After the publication of her memoir, Like Me, Confessions of a Heartland Country Singer, the work dried up. But then she was heavily into activism. In terms of black and brown people, or queer people, or gender non-binary folks in country music, Wright assesses, anyone who tells you that who you love or the experiences that you've had in the past shouldn't be high stakes for people either lacks an empathy bone or an education bone, or just isn't paying attention. In 2019, Wright was surprised to be invited back to play the Grand Ole Opry House, where she had made many appearances before her career stalled. I can't tell you how that fed and watered my spirit. Last year, Trisha Yearwood made an Opry appearance with the out singer Brooke Eden, modifying the title of a Yearwood hit to She's in Love with the Girl. It was a little scary, Yearwood remembers. I didn't know how it would be received, but it's just time. The author of this article, Alana Nash, is the author of 10 books, including Behind Closed Doors, Talking with the Legends of Country Music. She has also written for Vanity Fair, People, Rolling Stone, and the New York Times, and is a winner of a Country Music Association Media Award. Now, moving on to AARP The Bulletin, let's look back again at our article, Real Problems, Real Solutions, their special report on long-term care. And we're up to challenge number three, the high financial cost to families of caregiving. Caregiving can be costly, for the recipient, for the caregiver, for the economy. AARP research found that more than three-quarters of family caregivers spend their own money on caregiving. In 2021, the annual average was $7,242. Caring for someone with dementia boosts that figure to nearly $9,000. And then there's the cost of time. A 2019 study put the estimated economic value of unpaid caregiver work in 2017 at $470 billion. There are other economic ripple effects to caregiving. More than 75% of people age 50 plus who retired early because of family caregiving responsibilities would have stayed in the workforce longer if they had access to better financial support or work support, a recent AARP study found. My income took a hit, said Isley, the podcaster. All my savings for retirement took a hit. You don't set out to do this, thinking it's going to go on for 3 years. If you're caring for someone and trying to hold down a job, you might think of hiring in-home help. That, too, is costly. In 2021, you could expect to pay $5,148 a month, the national median, for a private home health aide, according to Glenworth, which tracks the cost of care. If the care recipient is able, a less expensive option is to use an adult daycare program with a monthly median cost of $1,690 as of 2021. Medicare, in most cases, does not pay for in-home care for basic services. One of the greatest misconceptions people have is that there will be a safety net to catch them, and there isn't, said Robert Espinoza, Vice President of Policy at PHI, an advocacy group for the direct care workforce, which includes home health aides. Long-term care insurance policies were once thought to be a solution, but insurers found they had underestimated how much they would have to pay in claims and had miscalculated returns on investments because of low interest rates. This prompted many companies to stop selling the policies. Today, policies are still available, but they aren't very popular. Only some 49,000 new policies were sold in 2020, according to the American Association for Long-Term Care Insurance. Cost might be one reason. A single 55-year-old male will pay $950 annually for a premium with an initial benefit amount of $165,000. A single 55-year-old female will pay $1,500 for the same policy. It's a product that is not inexpensive, says Jesse Sloan, director of the American Association for Long-Term Care Insurance, and there's no sense of immediacy that you have to purchase it, unlike other insurance. You can't buy a house and have a mortgage without homeowner's insurance. He adds, there's a certain type of person that buys it. They can afford it, and they plan. Not everybody is a planner. And, most importantly, you have to be in good health when you apply for this coverage. We have a nation that's not in particularly good health. Some financial help may be on the horizon. The Credit for Caring Act, introduced in Congress in May of 2021. The bipartisan AARP-supported bill would provide up to $5,000 in federal tax credits for eligible working family caregivers. Qualified expenses include respite care, home modifications, and hiring home care aides, as well as assistive technologies and transportation. Another option can be found in certain Medicare Advantage plans that offer coverage for more services, including home health aides, to help with caregiving. In 2018, the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, CMS, expanded the scope of primarily health-related supplemental benefits for those private plans. Now, some plans may offer gym memberships, transportation to doctor's appointments, healthier food options, and grab bars in bathrooms, and may even cover the cost for a person with chronic asthma to have their carpets deep cleaned to help control the condition. Challenge number four, a shortage of well-trained, reliable caregivers for hire. Paul McCartney famously wondered if someone would feed him when he turned 64. That question for many older Americans has become a very legitimate concern. As the number of older Americans increases, the demand for home health and personal care aides is projected to grow by 33% from 2020 to 2030, according to the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics. That rate of increase is much higher than the average for all occupations. We've been warning of a workforce shortage for years, Espinoza says. According to the Bureau of Labor Statistics, in 2021, the mean hourly wage for home health and personal care aides was $14.07, and the mean annual wage was $29,260. In every state and the District of Columbia, the direct care worker median wage is lower than the median wage for other occupations that have similar entry-level requirements, according to a 2020 PHI report. That includes janitors, retail clerks, and customer service representatives. In many states, McDonald's and Macy's will swoop these candidates up with easier entry points and training, Espinoza says. We need to figure out the compensation piece. Some states are finding creative ways to boost recruitment and retention in the paid caregiver workforce. In Wisconsin, the Wise Caregiver Careers Program was launched in 2018 as a public-private partnership between the State Department of Health and Nursing Home Provider Associations, generating interest from 9,000 recruits for 3,000 nursing home aide slots through marketing, free training, and a $500 retention bonus. We were competing against the big box stores and coffee shops, so it was really gratifying to get that much interest, said Kevin Coughlin, Policy Initiatives Advisor for Wisconsin's Department of Health. A new iteration of the program, about to get underway, will expand it to include jobs as home health care workers, not just positions in nursing homes. In New Mexico, the Ucentro Home Health Aid Program, HHA, is focused on creating career pathways for immigrants who speak Spanish to enter into elder care to serve the needs of Spanish-speaking communities. The emphasis is on HHAs to be independent contractors, not signed with an agency, allowing the caregiver to make a higher wage. In 2021, both part-time and full-time in the Ucentro graduates were making an average of $17.50 an hour, said Mady Lopez, home health aid training specialist. Those HHAs at an agency were making an average of $11.50. We'll continue with this next time. Now let's look at the Complete Guide to Memory, a Centennial Health magazine. And we're looking at when we were young. In the great forgetting, memories of early life are lost soon after age 3. What science says about this? Research is still being done to better understand the nuances of this seeming contradiction. Although various hypotheses have been put forward, including the notion that language development is a precursor to memory retention, meaning that because young children lack a full vocabulary, they cannot preserve memories, scientists are increasingly focused on the dramatic changes that occur to the brain during early childhood. One theory is that the rapid development during early childhood of new neurons in the hippocampus region of the brain, which is associated with memory and learning, interferes with memory retention, potentially by replacing synapses that are linked to specific memories. The instability associated with that rapid neuron growth and replacement, known as neurogenesis, means a decreased probability of being able to retrieve any single memory, says Paul Franklin, a senior scientist at the Hospital for Sick Children in Toronto. The chances that an adult can retrieve a particular memory from age 3, for example, are very low, somewhat higher for a memory from age 5, and higher still for memories made as age increases and neurogenesis slows, scientists believe. That pattern of increasingly probable memory retrieval tracks with observations of children. Franklin and his colleagues have conducted experiments on rodents that support this theory. First, the scientists taught adult mice, which have a lower rate of neurogenesis, similar to an adult human brain, to navigate a maze. They then artificially increased the mice's rate of hippocampal neurogenesis. The mice became more likely to forget what they had learned about the maze, suggesting what Franklin characterizes as rewiring, overwiring the recollections. The converse was true with young mice, which, like human children, have higher rates of neurogenesis and would be more prone to forget what they learned about the maze. When the scientists artificially slowed the young mice's neural development, they were likelier to remember their way through the maze. Interestingly, guinea pigs, which are born with much more developed brains, they can walk and see much earlier, do not naturally exhibit the same kind of infantile amnesia that mice do. But when researchers boosted their neurogenesis in experiments, they did. So what is apparent to conclude from all this? Researchers seem to agree that as children's ability to retain memories emerges, recall of particular events is increased when adults talk to them about the experiences after the fact. Most often, people's earliest memories involve highly emotive events, which Franklin says could be linked to the possibility that those events are associated with greater strengthening of the neural connections where memories are stored. That means those memorable events could even overcome the effects of neurogenesis. And while we can't recall most early events, they shape us in ways that remain poorly understood. The wrong takeaway is that it doesn't matter what your kids experience, because they're going to forget it anyway, he says. Carol Peterson, a researcher at Memorial University of Newfoundland in Canada, says early experiences can have a lasting impact on behavior and attitudes. For example, someone may not remember an early negative experience with a dog, but might still respond later with fear. The same could be true for children subject to early abuse or deprivation. For parents, the notion that the impact of painful events can transcend children's memories is unsettling. But the converse idea is a hopeful one, that the acts of love we show our young children every day, though they will eventually be lost to childhood amnesia, leave an enduring mark. After my father's death, our large extended family rallied around my mom, brother, and me, pitching in with childcare so she could attend graduate school. I don't remember a lot of it, but that support shaped my view of how people show up for one another. My mother's efforts to juggle a career with solo parenting gave me a sense of professional empowerment. Her eventual remarriage taught me about resilience and moving on after loss. Those are the lessons I'm choosing to embrace as I raise my daughter. This story was originally published in the Washington Post. We have two little sidebar comments here with this. When taught an action, a six-month-old will remember how to execute it for 24 hours. A one-year-old, on the other hand, will recall what she has been taught for a full year. And a child retains the skills they learned as an infant, but not the hours and days you spent lovingly teaching them how to think about or manipulate objects and facts. Now, looking at a page from AARP, the Bulletin, we have a couple of comments and some jokes here. One joke. Mark, is it crazy to be afraid of cats? Meg, depends. Are you a man or a mouse? Now, let's look at some quotables. This is from Shaquille O'Neal, who's 50, and he's talking about his kids. I tell them all the time, we ain't rich. I'm rich. This from Richard Dreyfuss, who's 74. I admit I've made some terrible movies, but for the first 30 years, that was just because the movie wasn't as good as the script. And in the last 20 years, it's just because of money. From David Letterman, 75. Everybody would say, oh, we love your mother. And I would say, yeah, try living with her for 18 years. Film director Joe Wright, 49. I'm dyslexic, and that wasn't diagnosed until I was 18, 19. Before that, I was just told I was stupid and lazy. From Martha Stewart, 80. I dated Sir Anthony Hopkins, but broke up with him because I couldn't stop thinking of him as Hannibal Lecter. From singer Patti Smith, 75. I create out of chaos, or I cause I create out of chaos, or I cause chaos when I'm creating. I did that with that, didn't I? This is from Jake Gyllenhaal, 41. As you get older, you get to a place where you see yourself as you saw your parents when you were a child. And that's a really beautiful perspective. From singer Irma Thomas, 81, on why she rarely performs Time Is On My Side, I got tired of explaining that I did it before the Rolling Stones. From Stevie Nicks, 73. I hear all those older songwriters go like, I can't write love songs anymore. And I'm like, well, that's just stupid. Go open your memory library and check in there. We have time for a few tips on saving money. This has to do with groceries. Grocery prices have gone up 10% in the past year, the largest annual rise in 40 years, according to the USDA. Use ground chicken in your chili. Beef and veal prices rose the most of main food groups this year at 16%. Fresh poultry increased less, and it was much cheaper to begin with. Plan this Friday for next Tuesday. A proven way to contain grocery costs is to plan out the week's meals and to buy food from a shopping list based solely on that plan. Friday is a great day for planning, and many stores post their week's discounts and deals that day or the day before. Well, folks, we have run out of time for today's episode of Modern Maturity. Be sure and listen at the same time next week. I hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Karen Edwards for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Modern Maturity is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, call 919-832-5138. Again, 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.